The governors of Oregon and California got together in one place and signed agreements to remove four dams from the Klamath River. Well, that was Governor Kulongoski and Governor Schwarzenegger years ago. See, we've been talking about Klamath Dam removal and water allocation for quite some time. The current governors, Brown and Brown, gathered in California last week to sign new agreements on dam removal after the old ones expired. The approach to dam removal is a bit different this time around. We'll get a number of perspectives in the hour ahead, beginning with Bob Gravely, who's the Manager of Communications and Public Affairs for Pacific Corp, the parent company of Pacific Power, which owns the four dams that are in question on the Klamath River. Bob, thanks for joining us on The Exchange. Okay, let's see if Bob, you there? Bob Gravely, there at all? All right, we might actually have Mike Connor on the line with us as well. He is the Deputy Secretary of the Interior involved with this process as well. Mike Connor, are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a bit about the long process to get to this point. It actually happened, to some eyes, a little sooner than might have been expected, given that the old agreements expired at the end of last year.
That's correct. So we've got a new set of agreements that would move forward with the dam removal process, and that was what was announced last week. We also have another agreement, the Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement, and I think overall the goal has been to continue to move forward with the objective of restoration of the Klamath River, restoring the fisheries, address the over-allocation issues. To your question about this did happen rather quickly after the expiration of the previous agreement, the KBRA, Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, it was clear that there were it was an uphill battle to get the previous agreements authorized through Congress the way they needed to be done. And so parties went back even before the termination of the KBRA, thinking through how they might proceed, because the bottom line here is that the owner of these facilities, PacifiCorp, has decided that relicensing them, maintaining them in as they've been, these four dams, is no longer cost-effective for the ratepayers, and certainly from a government perspective, the two states that you mentioned, Oregon, California, the federal government, a number of tribes, a number of local entities, recognize that there is value added from the decommissioning of these facilities and the restoration of the basin, and that may help with the overall sustainability of whether it be the fisheries, the tribal communities, as well as the opportunity to address agricultural-related issues in the upper basin.
All right. Mr. Deputy Secretary, it's going to get a little confusing here for a moment because with the different lines we have coming in, I'm going to have to put you on hold to be able to talk to Bob Gravely. So please stand by. You haven't been Okay, we don't know Bob Gravely. Never mind. So let's come back to you mentioned the water allocation issues that are not quite addressed here. And you, as a former commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, are probably well-versed in these from the B of R's work in the Klamath Basin with the Klamath Project. I mean, it seems like there's a long distance left to travel to take care of those issues.
You're absolutely right. There's more work ahead. And dam removal and the power and facilities agreement that were signed last week are a couple of important steps in the overall restoration effort, sustainability effort, but the real key to the Klamath Basin has been the cooperation amongst all the parties, the tribes, the state governments, local entities, including the irrigation districts. And the reason that there has been that collaboration and, quite frankly, compromises made in the negotiation of agreements has been the fact that everybody is looking at the sustainability of all communities. And for the upper basin area of the Klamath Basin, from the agricultural perspective, from the Klamath tribes perspective, that deals with addressing the water allocation issues. And from that standpoint, there have been certain elements of that have been left out because there has been no congressional action up until this point in time. And so our goal is to continue to work with those parties and the state and see if we can't get other agreements across the finish line in recognition of this landscape-level approach, this basin-wide approach to solving these issues.
All right. We do have Bob Gravely from Pacific Corporation on a different line now, so let's go to him. And I got to push a few more buttons here. So, Bob Gravely from Pacific Corp, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
So a lot of short time to deal with you here and a lot of issues to try to bring up. There's a separate Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement that was signed last week. Why is that necessary, and why is there a need for a dam removal entity, this new Klamath River Renewal Corporation?
Well, the reason for the entity is, you'll recall, the original agreement as signed would have required Congress to authorize the Interior Department to have federal agencies play a direct role in the removal of the dams. Congressional opposition to that direct federal role is one of the main reasons why, you know, we were unsuccessful in getting the whole settlement through Congress as originally planned. So in response, the plan B is to set up this non-governmental entity, still using the funds identified from PacifiCorp customers in the state of California bond money to carry out the facilities removal, but to do it without requiring Congress to give approval for that action.
And total price tag for removing the four dams is what?
The estimated cost from the study that was done previously is just below $300 million, $290 million. And in the agreement, PacifiCorp customers are in Oregon and California are currently paying a surcharge to raise the first $200 million of that. And then the state of California has identified up to an additional $250 million from a big water bond that was passed by voters in 2014.
I noticed the line item on my own power bill from Pacific Power a number of years ago. How much has been collected into that fund now?
More than half. PacifiCorp customers have contributed more than $100 million already. So that money is sitting in trust accounts overseen by the Public Utility Commissions in Oregon and California.
Just a couple of seconds left here. Were there terms in the agreements that PacifiCorp sought and did not get?
No. This amended version of the dam removal agreement contains all of the main protections for PacifiCorp customers that were in the original agreement that has allowed us to be supportive and make dam removal part of the larger agreement, so that the cost cap on our customers and the liability protection that were included in the original agreement are part of the agreement that was signed last week.
Okay, good to have these perspectives. Bob Gravely is with Pacific Corporation. We heard from Mike Connor earlier, who is the Deputy Secretary of Interior. We'll be talking more about Klamath Dams when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about Klamath Dams and the project to remove four hydroelectric dams from the Klamath River. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We all will indeed spend the rest of the hour talking about the new agreements to remove the four dams from the Klamath River. The two governors, Interior Secretary, tribal leaders, and more gathered last week to sign two new agreements to remove one dam in Oregon and three in California by the end of the decade. Here's the voice of California Governor Jerry Brown from that ceremony.
And what we're doing today in healing this river, it's something that has implications not only for the United States, but all over the world, because there are rivers that need to be cleaned up that are much worse than this one, and that millions, hundreds of millions of people depend on. So this is a good exercise of humankind correcting some of the mistakes that it's made in the past.
Governor Jerry Brown from the ceremony last week in Requa, California, on the banks of the Klamath River, talking about removing four Klamath dams. Craig Tucker is the Klamath campaign manager for the Karuk tribe, where he's a natural resources policy advocate and our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Craig, welcome back to the Exchange.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Once the old Klamath agreements expired at the end of last year, did you think they were dead and buried?
Well, I have to say it was a very disappointing end to the year last year. We thought we could have a return of the kind of engaged campaign that we had for a long time, where we had to kind of wrestle with PacifiCorp over this issue. But I think the years of negotiation and the relationships that formed and really the facts on the table that emerged over these last few years had everybody really committed to dam removal going forward. And so I was very pleased when the company, the governors, and the Obama administration crafted this new agreement.
Was there much division within the tribe about moving forward with the dam removal or any part of the water allocation process that goes with it?
No, I think we were really hoping for something even bigger. I mean, we're getting what I think will be the largest dam removal effort in U.S. history, but you know, our sights were even higher. We wanted to balance water use in the basin. We wanted to invest in habitat restoration. We wanted to invest in infrastructure upgrades for agricultural communities. So those things all required Congress to be a participant. And so Congress refused to participate. And so we did what we could do without Congress, and that is remove the dams.
Is there, you know, when you mentioned this is the largest dam removal project in the United States, I think by several measures. So there's no real experience here on this scale. So what kind of roadmap or river map, if you'll use that expression, for fish behavior can you kind of figure out here? I mean, what happens when fish can reenter a river where the portions of the river have been blocked by dams for so long? Do we have any idea?
Well, we can look at removals in places like where Condit Dam was removed and other large dam removals around the country. And the one thing is that fish always exceed expectations for returning and recolonizing reaches of river that have been off limits to them. And I think it's sort of a natural feature of salmonids. If you think about the Klamath Basin, this is a place where volcanic eruptions, mudslides, there have been natural blockages of the river over the course of geologic time. And, of course, eventually those blockages get washed away, and the fish once again recolonize the upper reaches of the basin. So I don't think we're really asking fish to do anything they're not already, you know, biologically tuned to do.
What are your concerns about river flows minus dams in dry summers like we had last year and for 3 years before that?
Well, the dams, it's interesting. I think this is a hard thing to get people to understand, but the four dams that we're removing don't really control how much water is in the Klamath River. The reservoirs behind these dams are relatively small. The water storage on the Klamath River is Upper Klamath Lake. And so if you're really worried about flows in the river, it's really a function of how much water gets to Upper Klamath Lake over the course of the winter and how much water is taken out of Upper Klamath Lake in the spring and summer for irrigation. So that's why, we, on the one hand, we were working with PacifiCorps on the dam issue, but on the other hand, we have to work with irrigators and the Bureau of Reclamation on the flow issue because they're really controlled by separate mechanisms.
There are so many things that complicate that, too, though, aren't there? Because there are fish that are sensitive species that are in the Upper Klamath Lake ecosystem that they're trying to hold water back for there, and you're trying to get some more flows so that the salmonids do better in the lower river. I mean, these actually essentially have fish species working against each other's needs here, don't you?
Well, it's even more complicated than that. We also have birds on the National Wildlife Refuges. So it's really a balancing act between salmon in the river, suckers in the lakes, birds in the refuges, and then, of course, the irrigation communities who need water to grow their crops. So it is a complicated water balancing act, and frankly, that's why it took us so long to craft an agreement we could all live with. There was a lot of technical analysis. We had agricultural engineers at the table. We had fish biologists. We had hydrologists. So figuring out how to balance the system is a huge challenge.
Every time a dam comes out, dam removal opponents talk about the silt that might have collected behind the dams for the years they were there, which is getting on a century now. What do you know about what exists behind the Klamath dams and what's likely to happen when these four things are removed?
Well, that was one of our first questions because we knew that if the silt was contaminated with mercury or other toxins, all of a sudden the cost of dam removal could become so great that this would never be economically feasible. And normally, those kinds of toxins are in behind dams where there's been a lot of gold mining activity upstream, so we see this in the Sierras quite often. Luckily, on the Klamath, all the gold mining that went on and continues to go on happens downstream of the dams, and that's because above the dams, it's a volcanic geology, and that's just not where you find gold. So we didn't have that toxic legacy associated with gold mining to contend with. And so we have drilled core samples in all those reservoirs and had them tested. And what we find is there's not a real concern. There's not a toxic contamination problem that we have to deal with on the Klamath. So we're really lucky there.
Toxic or not, has silt been as big an issue as it is often portrayed to be prior to dam removal?
No, we think there are, we see landslide events on the Klamath at a regular interval that puts as much silt into the river as what's stored behind the dams, and the Klamath sort of bears the load of that. That's not to say that there won't be sort of an immediate short-term negative impact. When we take out those dams, and that silt comes downstream, it's not going to be good for salmon in the ensuing weeks and months. But we think that pretty quickly the river will flush that sediment out. We've done quite a bit of modeling analysis to show that. And so we feel confident that although there may be a short-term cost, it'll be more than worth the long-term gains.
Craig Tucker is a natural resources policy advocate with the Karuk Tribe, where he's the Klamath campaign manager here on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Klamath Dam removal projects. He's one of several guests we'll have in this hour. Randy and Roosh wrote an email. He says, I'm curious to know if there's any plan to compensate the landowners for loss of value for properties located around what will be former lakes once created by these dams.
Well, I would argue that those landowners live around a lake that for 2 or 3 months of year is posted warning against human contact because of these massive blooms of toxic blue-green algae. And so we're going to replace that toxic algae-riddled reservoir with a healthy, free-flowing river with salmon in it. So I'm just not convinced that there's going to be a real loss in property values. In fact, I think that property owners will probably see their properties increase in value over time.
We talked briefly with Bob Gravely at Pacific Corp about the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, which is something new called a dam removal entity. So essentially it is the entity that has to set this process in motion through FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which would have to allow the dams to be decommissioned and so forth. Is it all on this dam removal entity, or are there parts to play in for the tribes like the Karuk and other players making the case?
Well, we think this is the right strategy, and I'll say that because it's a tried-and-true strategy. This is exactly what happened on the Penobscot River back in Maine with the removal of Edwards Dam. They created a 501c3 that became the administrative body for the removal effort, and it worked. They removed that dam. Fish are in places today out there that they've never been in probably 100 years or more. So we think it works. We think it works because we want there to be a entity whose mission in life is removing those dams. And so that's what this nonprofit entity will be. And I do think it helps address some of PacifiCorp's concerns. PacifiCorp is an energy company, and they really aren't in the business of removing the dams. So having them hand them over to someone whose mission in life is to remove them, I think makes PacifiCorp more comfortable, and I think is one of the things that attracted them to the agreement.
All right. Craig Tucker, the Klamath campaign manager for the Karuk Tribe, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. We are spending this hour talking about the new agreements to remove 4 hydroelectric dams from the Klamath River. The 2 governors, the Interior Secretary, tribal leaders, and more gathered last week to sign 2 new agreements to remove 1 dam in Oregon and 3 in California by the end of the decade. Here is the voice of Jared Huffman, who represents Congress California District Number 2.
As much as we have damaged the Klamath River, as much as we have starved it of the cold, clean water it needs for decades, the ecological heart of this river is still very much alive. And by virtue of the leadership that we are showing today, it will once again thrive.
Well, congressional leadership, as you've heard, has been criticized for not being there in some cases by the likes of Craig Tucker, who just left us a moment ago. Now joining us by phone from Washington, D.C., U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat from Oregon. Senator Merkley, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey. It's great to be with you.
This did get stuck in Congress. Congress ended up not doing anything meaningful that would have allowed the Klamath agreements to have something done with them before they expired, the original ones, late last year. What was the holdup?
Well, the holdup is that the House wasn't ready to act, I think largely because of opposition to dam removal. And so we're hoping that now that we are are being able to find an alternative pathway for dam removal, that will free up the works, and we can forge a bicameral agreement and move this forward.
Did you think it was dead and buried once the year came and the end of the year came and the agreements expired?
No, not at all. I've been involved in this since I was elected. In 2009, when I came down to Klamath, the stakeholders got together and they said they were trying to figure out how to sit in the room together and hammer out agreement, and they knew it was difficult, but they were making progress. And I told them, look, what you're doing is phenomenal. I mean, long traditional enemies, if you will, sitting down, forging relationships, and it said, if you all can work out a plan, I'll do everything I can to help you get it passed. And I've been doing that now for the last 8 years, and we are determined that every time we hit a roadblock, we're going to find a way around it and just keep pushing forward.
So I'm curious. I know that you are in the Senate. Greg Walden and Doug LaMalfa are in a different party in a different House of Congress. Did you ever have discussions with them about pushing the Klamath process along?
Oh, absolutely. Many discussions.
Obviously not terribly fruitful ones.
No, it did establish at least a dialogue over the situation so that they could share their reservations and their internal process and what they saw as the obstacles in the House. And Senator Wyden and I were urging for us to seize the moment. Unfortunately, that wasn't possible. But again, I mean, we keep running into obstacles. For example, we had a key part of this agreement is restoring some of the forest that was taken away from the Klamath tribe when they were eliminated by the federal government. They were later restored, but their traditional lands had become a national forest, and we had hoped to be able to enable the tribe to buy a big chunk of private land. That private land got sold. Now we're trying to figure out how they can acquire a piece of what was their previous forest reserves that are part of a national forest system. We're just going to keep looking for new ways of tackling these problems until we can put all the parts together.
How in particular, I understand that the need to restore tribal lands or the desire to do so anyway, but how is that connected specifically to water issues in the Upper Basin?
Well, you think about the situation. When I began this conversation in 2009, when I became involved, there were unsettled water rights. What happened in the course of the last 8 years is the tribes have won adjudication that basically gives them the top water right from time immemorial. That changes the whole dynamic. That created an urgency. They are in control of the water in the basin. They were very valiant in sticking with the framework that they'd hammered out before they won that, and that framework did provide much more reliable supplies for our ranchers and for our farmers. But part of the deal that they put forward is for them to be able to do that, one, they needed to have the dams out, help restore the health of the rivers, help restore the salmon run, some 400 miles of additional salmon habitat, and another was to get a working forest back to help restore their tribal lands, not all of them, just a fraction of them, but also to be able to have that be a working forest that could create jobs and industry for the tribe. So these things are all linked together in a complicated dialogue and agreement that addressed the need of ranchers and farmers for water, the health of the river, restoration of a working forest, and the pieces don't work if they're all separated into pieces apart, if you will.
Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange, as we talk about the Klamath Dam Removal Project. Is the project as it's set up now with the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement renewed and this additional Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement, is this sidestepping Congress in a sense?
Well, I would say it's helping. When you run into an obstacle in one place, you turn somewhere else. And essentially, what we've heard from the House members was they're just philosophically opposed to dam removal. Just couldn't put their name on or support anything that had dam removal in it. We could point out how unusual the situation is, that the owners of the dams want to take out the dams. The dams have reached the end of their 50-year authorization, that putting in the fish ladders that would be required for renewal would be cost prohibitive, that the Public Utilities Commission in six different districts has all endorsed dam removal as the best deal for the customers of the electric company. We could go through all those things, but in the end, what the House saw was just the symbolic nature of not wanting to be associated with dam removal. So the kind of the facts didn't matter, the details didn't matter. And so being able to do this in a separate structure, setting up this nonprofit as dedicated to seeing this through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the FERC process, is a very beneficial step that goes works very well with trying to solve the political problems we've had in getting the agreements passed.
Senator Merkley, are you skeptical at all of the project reaching the finish line given what has gone on before?
I can tell you that when I visited some of the tributaries of the Klamath River and thought about seeing salmon in them again, I just keep saying, sometime before I die, I want to see salmon in this river, hopefully much sooner than later. But I think what has happened now has really given me a lot of optimism that we've solved another big hurdle. And if we just keep pushing and brainstorming, then slowly we'll just tackle each piece of this.
All right, more to talk about with the Klamath Dams, but that'll be the last we'll hear from Senator Jeff Merkley. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson
Exchange. You're welcome. Great to be with you.
Good to have you here. So we'll talk more about Klamath Dams when we come back from a break. On the way to a break, let me bring you up to date. $134,000 just about in our spring fund drive, seeking $185,000. This is the last day. We will not be asking, exhorting, cajoling, pleading, begging, whatever it is you think we're doing. We will not be doing it tomorrow. So your pledges are welcome now at ijpr.org online and at 888-552-6191. Back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk more about the Klamath Dams in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Final segment for today. We are talking about the Klamath Dam Removal Project. Four dams expected to come out of the Klamath River. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. The big ceremony was last week when the two governors, the Interior Secretary, tribal leaders, local officials, and people from all levels of government gathered to sign two new agreements to remove the dams from the Klamath River by the end of the decade. Here is the voice of Kate Brown, Oregon's governor.
To all of you who've worked so hard to where we are today, you have made a real and lasting difference in the world. Thank you for your perseverance. Now let's keep going.
The keep going may be of particular interest to folks like the Klamath Water Users Association, where Becky Hyde is a negotiator from the Upper Klamath Water Users, where there are still concerns about water allocation outside of any issues involving dams or not. Becky, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Bet.
So your association is or is not a signatory to the new agreement?
Yes, we are a signatory, and we our farmers and ranchers are in the up above Klamath Lake.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to confuse us with the Klamath Project irrigators that are represented by a Klamath Water Users Association. Those were the folks who had their water shut off in 2001, and they also are signatories to the agreement.
So as a negotiator, it's a little hard for me to understand the complexity that you must have had to go through to get to any place on these agreements when you got so many different bodies with so many different interests.
Yeah, it's been kind of a rush, but I would say that for some of us, I personally have been working on this issue for 18 years. So many of the relationships in the basin have been established over years and years of time. And so you know, the facilities agreement that went along with the recent signing of the hydro agreement came together very quickly, and it offers a limited amount of support to the agricultural community, but important support in that when dams come out, the ag community really wants to be prepared for fish coming back up into the tributaries and up into the upper reaches of the river. So what this agreement does is assure agriculture that we're going to work together on any issues around endangered species coming, you know, swimming near ranches, and how we work to restore habitat so that we can feel good about those fish being there and not have to be scared and defensive.
What kinds of practices would ranchers and farmers be most defensive about or feel like they might have to change if there were endangered fish coming close to their property?
Well, actually, especially in the tributaries above Klamath Lake where I live, you have a pretty evolved ag community with a lot of folks who already understand basic things about water quality, riparian vegetation, mostly along your rivers. And so you have a large amount of people who have already, like, fenced their river, have changed their practices, and then you have many, many people that are in that pipeline to do the same. So we're a community that's acting for our future and, you know, trying to work in the best interest of continuing to farm and ranch, but also to take care of the resource.
We have an email question from Jim, no town given. He asks, what happens to the fish when they come up against the Link River Dam in Klamath Falls? Can they get past that one into Upper Klamath Lake, or will it stop them? It won't be removed as part of the deal. I should point out that Keno Dam will not be either. They both have fish ladders, don't they?
I am not the fish person, okay. But my understanding is that Keno does or will have fish ladders, and that Link will, there will be passage.
All right,
the big dams on the Klamath are you know, higher and larger than those small facilities. But again, you're asking the rancher this question.
Okay. So but yeah, they do both have fish ladders, the two dams that will stay in place with this agreement. Is there stuff in this revised Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement or this new entity, the Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement, that addresses in any way the kinds of things that were addressed in the Upper Klamath Basin water agreement, the water allocation specifically?
I think what's important, and you probably talked about this earlier, is that in at the end of Congress last year, we failed to pass the important agreements that came to in the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, which affected the whole basin, and also the Upper Basin Comprehensive Agreement, which is the region that I live in. Both of those agreements had a lot to do with water balance and the allocation of water for fish and for agriculture. And so with the expiration of the KBRA, we really sort of have upended that water balance conversation, and it's frankly creates a lot of anxiety for us in agriculture. I mean, we feel very good about our partnerships up and down the basin. I think that was memorialized by both the Upper Klamath water users and Klamath water users signing the recent step that we just took in the agreement. But we do have a lot of work to do to continue stabilizing our community and figure out that water balance again.
With or without dams, there is the ongoing issue of water being over-promised or oversubscribed, depending on which phrase you prefer. I mean,
right,
as the water issues have played out over the last couple of decades now, I mean, have some people just gotten out of agriculture in the Upper Klamath Basin?
Yes, but really what we've done, I mean, I think the last 2 years, speaking for the Upper Basin, it's been very, very incredible to watch my community share water in some of the worst drought situations we've seen for years. Last summer, people in agriculture were in rotation with their water use, meaning, you know, I get a small allocation now, you get a small allocation tomorrow, and we maintained important flows for fish at the same time that we shared an extremely minimal amount of water. And I want to be clear that in no way did my ranch or other ranches above the lake get the amount of water that they needed to run full operations last summer. But what they did do was share a scarce resource and also meet a threshold for healthy fishery. So I guess a point that I want to make is we have a lot of work to do in terms of pulling a water balance back together to go to Congress, which does need to memorialize an Indian water rights settlement, and we need Congress. But we are not new at this. We have been working with one another for a couple decades now, and important issues that we have coming up, like Klamath lands, tribal lands for the Klamath tribes, have been reoccurring themes for, you know, 15 years. You know, water balance and how we grapple with that is something that we work on every week of the year, year round. So, although we have a lot of work ahead, we've put in a lot of work, and we have some very strong relationships at the table. So it's not like a bunch of hostile people showing up trying to work through their social issues. We are very determined to work together for the future of our community.
But as well as you work together on water, is there general agreement on things like allocating land for the Klamath tribe, or is that something that where the coalition begins to splinter a bit?
Yeah, I think there's agreement. I mean, absolutely, it was in the KBRA. It talked about lands, and also was re-mentioned in the Upper Klamath Basin Comprehensive Agreement. I was involved when that land issue first came up, probably, you know, 2005. At that time, it was a very polarizing and, frankly, ugly issue in our community. Really, a lot of people that were not directly related to, like, the water issue were just, you know, kind of up in arms about that. But, you know, that's more than a decade ago, and we may see some negativity from folks basically in the community that at this point need to evolve on that issue as we move forward. But it's a core issue, and I think it has a lot of support. And really, we need to just, you know, it seems like when we do the right things, both for the environment and for farm and ranch families and for tribal families, we move forward. And it's good. It's good for all of us.
Becky, do you think with the dams essentially being dealt with in a separate track that this increases the odds that Congress will make some moves on what your water needs are in the Upper Basin?
I think so. I really do. That's the signals that we are getting. The reason you don't have Klamath water users on the phone this morning and you just get me is because they're on a plane headed to D.C. to have more conversations about this. I think Congressman Walden really wants to move forward, the congressman from our district. Congressman LaMalfa, who is in California, has been vocally opposed, especially recently, and he's been sort of tied in with a very negative element in our basin, you know, trying to oppose dam removal. When we had a kind of a negative meeting in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago, I asked the audience of folks who showed up to the folks that were opposed to dam removal in the audience, I said, how many of you are from agriculture? And there was only one man in the audience. So I think Congressman LaMalfa has an issue in his district, which is that the folks who live around the dams, the homeowners that live around the dams that are now going to have a beautiful river instead of lakes going by their property, need to be assured, though, that they have a good, strong future. And I would really like to see both the Siskiyou County Commissioners and Congressman LaMalfa kind of wake up and do something for their folks, because they've been offered time and time again a hand to try to deal with these issues, and they've just been negative. So hopefully they can go off on that track and get busy and get to work protecting people in their community. And then those of us who are in agriculture above the lake can continue to work with the tribes and the conservation community that's part of the coalition to move forward on our water settlement.
Becky Hatfield-Hyde is a negotiator for the Upper Klamath Water Users. Thank you for joining us today in the exchange, and thanks for your candor.
Hey, thank you. Have a great day.
It's been a pleasure. Take care.